All right, so you want to know more about the Negev and Sinai. Well, you're in luck. We're taking a deep dive into Dr. Elaine Phillips' lecture on those regions from her Intro to Biblical Studies course.
Buckle up. It's going to be a fun ride.
So, full disclosure, neither of us are experts in like archaeology or ancient history.
But we both found Dr. Phillips' lecture fascinating, so we're going to try to unpack it together.
Exactly. How do these regions, often seen as just empty deserts, play a key role in understanding so much of the Bible? And we'll try to connect it back to, you know, how it matters to us today.
That's the goal.
Perfect. So maybe we should start with like a basic overview. Where are these places? What kind of sources do we have? And what's our mission, so to speak, for this deep dive?
Okay, good idea. So the Negev, that's a modern day Israel, right? It's the southern part of the country.
Yep. And the name itself gives us some clues. Negev actually means both south and dry.
That makes sense. It's telling us right away where it is and what kind of environment we're dealing with.
Right. And when we talk about the biblical Negev, we're mainly looking at two basins that sort of form a bow tie shape around the city of Beersheba.
That's a cool way to visualize it.
Yeah.
And I remember Dr. Phillips saying that the geology is really important here.
Yeah, like the limestone, the chalk. Oh, and those unique crater-like formations called Maktesium.
Yeah. Those were formed by erosion over millions of years.
Right. And that kind of geology really impacts like where people could settle and where they could find water.
Yeah. And water, oh boy, water is a big deal in the Negev, isn't it? Imagine living in a place with only 8 to 12 inches of rain per year.
Seriously. That's like less than most people use watering their lawns.
Exactly. That makes it the most valuable resource in the region, hands down.
Makes you wonder how people even survived there.
Well, that's where those wells come in.
Those weren't just holes in the ground, right? They were lifelines.
Right. They dug them in these dry riverbeds called wadis to tap into underground water sources. Mm. And if you remember those stories from Genesis about Abraham and Isaac digging wells.
And having all those conflicts over them.
Mm.
It suddenly makes those stories come alive when you think about how crucial water was for their survival.
Absolutely. They weren't just arguing about some random watering hole. We're talking about their family's future.
Yeah. Control over water meant control over trade routes and power.
Exactly.
So it's not just survival, it's also about economics and politics.
Up bot on.
Cool. So Dr. Phillips also talked about some key cities in the Negev. One that stood out to me was Arad. This place dates back to like 3,000, 2,000 BC, way before the Israelites.
Wow, so it's got a long history, even before the biblical period.
Yeah, first it was connected to Egypt, then it became an Israelite administrative center. But here's the kicker. They found a temple there.
Oh, yeah. A temple outside of Jerusalem was a huge deal, especially when you consider, like, King Hezekiah and Josiah's reforms trying to centralize worship.
Makes you think, right? What was happening at that temple? Quiet prayer or, like, elaborate rituals? What was it like to be there?
And they found all those ostraca in Era, too, right? Like, over 100 in one room.
What are those again?
Oh, they're ancient post-it notes, basically. Little pieces of pottery or stone with writing on them.
Oh, wow. So we get, like, a direct message from the past? What were they writing about?
Everything. Administration stuff, military dispatches, personal letters, grocery lists, you name it.
It's crazy to think that we can see what people were worried about back then, their struggles, and also their, like, everyday lives.
Yeah. Some of those ostraca actually suggest that Arad was under pressure from Edom toward the end of the Judean monarchy.
Which we wouldn't know just from reading the Bible.
It's a reminder that history is full of surprises and that archaeology can fill in the gaps.
And that maybe there's more to the story than what's written down.
For sure.
Okay, now on to another important city, Beersheba. I remember Dr. Phillips saying that it was a significant location, even back in the time of the patriarchs. What made it so important, do you think?
Well, it's right at the junction of those two basins we talked about,
yeah,
which makes it a strategic spot with good access to water. Remember that story about Abraham and Abimelech making a treaty at Beersheba?
Vaguely. What was that about again?
Well, that's actually where the city got its name. Beersheba means well of the oath or well of seven, referring to the seven lambs they used to seal the deal.
Ah, I see. So right from the start, Beersheba was a place of, like, agreements and alliances, but also potential conflict, right?
Yeah, it was like a crossroads in the Negev.
And its importance continued throughout history.
Oh, absolutely. They've even found evidence there of a horned altar that was destroyed and rebuilt. Some scholars think this might be linked to King Josiah's religious reforms, remember?
Wow, so another layer to the story.
It seems like everywhere you turn in the Negev, there's a story waiting to be told.
Right. it's not just empty space. People lived here, loved, fought, and made history. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. Okay, so we've got the Negev with its water challenges, biblical stories, resilient people. But now I think we need to shift gears a bit. Dr. Phillips also talked about Egypt and its huge impact on the Israelites. Why was that connection so important, do you remember?
Oh, yeah. Well, Egypt was a powerhouse in the ancient world. The Nile River was, like, their lifeblood, literally and symbolically. It made their entire civilization possible.
Right. Providing water for their crops and a way to transport goods.
Exactly. And I'm still blown away by those pictures of the pyramids and temples. The scale of those projects is just mind-boggling.
It's clear that they wanted to leave their mark on the world, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. And their influence extended far beyond their borders.
Like they were a major force in the region.
Yep. Remember the story of Joseph? He ends up in Egypt, gains power, and eventually brings his entire family there to escape a famine.
Right. That sets the stage for the Israelites' time in Egypt.
Which becomes a defining period in their history, for better or worse.
And we can't forget about those pharaohs, those larger-than-life figures. Dr. Phillips seemed especially fascinated by Ramses II and all his building projects.
Oh, yeah. Ramses II, the great builder, his statues, temples, and inscriptions are all over Egypt.
I remember her talking about the temple complex at Aswan, and that they actually moved the whole thing when they built the Aswan High Dam.
I know, right? It's crazy. To avoid it being submerged, they took it apart piece by piece, numbered every block, and then reassembled it like a giant jigsaw puzzle.
Wow. They moved an entire temple. That's incredible.
The statues of Ramses II at that temple are 67 feet tall.
67 feet. That's taller than a six-story building.
Talk about leaving a legacy.
So we've got the Negev with its water challenges and its biblical stories. And then we've got Egypt, this superpower that shaped so much of the ancient world. But where does the Sinai Peninsula fit into all of this?
That's a great question. I think of the Sinai as the bridge between those two worlds. It's the geographical link between Egypt and Canaan, and it's crucial to the Israelites' journey after the Exodus.
Right, that's where they wandered for 40 years, right?
Exactly. And Dr. Phillips described the Sinai as super diverse, with sand dunes, foothills, these vast barren areas called Edi, and those dramatic granite mountains.
Makes you wonder how they even survived there.
Water was definitely a big issue. They had to rely on oases and springs for survival. And remember, they weren't traveling alone. They had their families and their flocks with them.
Wow, that must have been tough.
Their journey is pretty remarkable, for sure.
Speaking of remarkable, what about Mount Sinai itself? That's where they received the Ten Commandments, right? Where they made that covenant with God.
Yeah, that's right. But Dr. Phillips did mention there's debate about its exact location.
Oh, really? I thought it was pretty well established.
Apparently not. There are actually multiple places that claim to be the real Mount Sinai.
Huh, interesting. So which one does Dr. Phillips think it is?
She seems to lean towards the traditional site, Jebel Musa.
Which means Mountain of Moses, right?
Exactly.
But why Jebel Musa? Why not one of the other sites?
Well, its isolation might have been a factor. Being in such a remote location, far from everyday distractions, would have allowed the Israelites to focus on their encounter with the divine.
Ah, that makes sense. It's like going on a retreat, but on a much grander scale.
And speaking of awe-inspiring locations, didn't Dr. Phillips mention that there's a famous monastery at the foot of Jebel Musa?
I think so. What was it called again?
St. Catherine's Monastery.
Ah, yeah.
It's one of the oldest continuously operating Christian monasteries in the world.
Wow, that's incredible. So for over 1,500 years, people have been drawn to this spot in the Sinai Desert, seeking spiritual enlightenment and connection.
Pretty amazing, right?
I have to admit, my mind is blown. We've gone from spice roots and ancient temples to granite mountains and ancient monasteries. It's amazing how each place we've visited has a story to tell.
And we've only just scratched the surface. There's so much more to explore.
I know, right? It's like Dr. Phillips has handed us this map to a vast and uncharted territory, and now it's up to us to choose our own adventure.
I love that analogy.
But before we set off exploring on our own, maybe we should take a moment to, like, tie everything together. What have we learned so far? What stands out to you as particularly interesting or surprising?
Yeah, good idea. What's resonating with you the most?
It's wild to think about, right? Like, as the Israelites were wandering around in the Sinai, trying to figure out who they were and where they belonged, this monastery was taking root, becoming the symbol of faith that would last for centuries.
It really shows you the staying power of those sacred places, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And the monastery itself, It's like this treasure chest full of amazing icons, some of the oldest in the world, and a library packed with ancient manuscripts.
Like a time capsule, preserving not just religious texts, but also these glimpses into early Christian art and thought. They even have the Codex Sinaiticus there.
The what now?
The Codex Sinaiticus. It's a 4th century Greek manuscript of the Bible, one of the most important ones ever found.
Wow, imagine holding a book that old, knowing that people centuries ago were reading those same words, wrestling with those same ideas.
It's like a direct connection to the past.
Totally. And it just shows you that St. Catherine's Monastery is more than just a place for prayer. It's been a center of scholarship and preservation for, like, forever.
It makes you think about those monks who spent their lives copying those texts, you know, making sure they survive for future generations.
It really shows you the power of dedication, right, and how much these sacred places meant to people.
Definitely. Okay, so speaking of places, remember that phrase Dr. Phillips mentioned? From Dan to Beersheba.
Oh, yeah. I've always loved that phrase.
What does it mean again?
It basically described the whole territory of ancient Israel, especially during the United Monarchy. Dan, up north, was one boundary, and Beersheba, down south, marked the other.
So, like, their version of coast to coast. But instead of oceans, they had these cities.
Exactly.
This is just a simple phrase, but it really gives you a sense of, like, the scope of their world, you know, and how important Beersheba was as this southern marker.
Plus, it was strategically vital. It was the gateway to the Negev and beyond, so controlling it meant controlling access to trade and resources.
Which explains why there were so many conflicts and power struggles over it, right?
Exactly. It's all about location, location, location.
And it makes you think, right, how does our own geography shape our lives and our perspectives?
Totally. Like, just as those ancient Israelites were influenced by the landscapes they lived in, the resources they had access to, the challenges they faced, we are too, in our own way.
It's a good reminder that we're not that different from the people who came before us, even though we live in such a different world.
Exactly. We face different challenges, sure, but we're still driven by the same basic human needs and desires.
Speaking of which, remember how Dr. Phillips briefly talked about the Navatayans?
Oh, yeah. The desert dwellers who, like, mastered survival techniques and controlled the spice trade.
Sounds like something out of an Indiana Jones movie.
They're a perfect example of human adaptability, wouldn't you say? Thriving in a region most people would consider uninhabitable. They had this complex trade network that spanned huge distances.
So they were transporting things like frankincense and myrrh, all those exotic spices that were in such high demand back then.
You got it. And they became super wealthy and powerful because of it. They even carved these incredible cities into the cliffs at Petra. And their water management systems. So advanced, they could actually grow crops in the desert.
Wait, farming in the desert? How did they manage that? We've been talking about how water is so scarce in these regions.
They were like the ultimate water conservationists. They built dams, cisterns, channels, everything to catch every drop of rain.
Wow.
And they figured out how to grow crops that could handle those harsh conditions. They were way ahead of their time when it came to sustainability.
It's mind-blowing what they accomplished, considering the challenges they faced.
Right. And their story is a testament to human potential, you know?
Yeah.
What we can achieve when we set our minds to it.
All right, before we wrap up this part, let's do a quick recap. We started in the Negev, this land shaped by its lack of water, and we saw how the lives of everyone, from the patriarchs to everyday people, were tied to this landscape.
Yep. And then we traveled to Egypt, the superpower with its awe-inspiring monuments, and we saw how its influence touched the lives of the Israelites.
And finally, we ended up in the Sinai, that bridge between those two worlds, where we explored Mount Sinai and discovered the enduring legacy of St. Catherine's Monastery.
Plus, we met the Nabataeans, those masters of desert survival who turned hardship into innovation and built this thriving trade empire.
It's amazing how all these seemingly different places and people are connected, you know, like threads in this big, intricate tapestry of history.
And it makes you realize that there's always more to uncover, even in places we think we already know.
Exactly. So for those of you listening, what's sticking with you? What's got you curious? We'll pick up those threads in just a bit. It's amazing, right? These regions we often picture as, like, desolate wastelands are actually bursting with history and stories of human resilience. We've uncovered those hidden temples, explored the legacies of powerful pharaohs, even climbed a mountain or two.
And all without leaving our chairs.
Exactly. But the coolest part, we've only just scratched the surface.
Dr. Phillips' lecture gave us a good foundation, you know, a way to start understanding it all. But There are so many more paths to explore from here.
Like, she gave us a map to this massive uncharted territory.
Yeah.
And now it's up to us to choose our own adventure, right?
I like that.
But before we wander off on our own, maybe we should try to, like, tie everything together one last time.
Sounds good. Where do we even begin?
Well, we started in the Negev, right? This land shaped by its lack of water and the ingenuity of the people who called it home.
We saw how their stories, the patriarchs, the kings, even those everyday folks, were all intertwined with this unique landscape.
And then we went to Egypt, this superpower with its incredible monuments and its far-reaching influence. And we saw how it shaped the destiny of the Israelites.
From pyramids to temples, we got this glimpse into their grandeur and ambition.
And then finally, we arrived in the Sinai, that bridge between the two, a place of spiritual change and lasting faith.
We explored Mount Sinai, where the Israelites got the Ten Commandments, and we discovered St. Catherine's Monastery, that testament to human dedication and the draw of sacred spaces.
And along the way, we met some amazing people, like the Nabataeans, who carved out this whole civilization in the desert.
They showed us what's possible with some creativity and a whole lot of determination. Turning scarcity into abundance, hardship into innovation.
Their story, and all the others we've heard today, reminds us that even in the toughest environments, hope and that resilience can flourish.
So true.
Okay, so as we wrap up our deep dive, I want to leave you with a final thought, something to think about as you continue exploring. If the Israelites' journey through the wilderness was supposed to shape them into a nation, what can our own wilderness experiences teach us?
Think about the tough stuff you faced, the times you've had to overcome obstacles.
How have those experiences shaped you? Your beliefs, your values, how you see the world?
Because maybe those seemingly empty stretches in our lives when we feel lost are actually chances for growth.
Maybe it's in those moments that we discover our own strength and resilience, our own unique path and purpose.
The Negev and Sinai might seem far away, but their stories still resonate, offering these timeless glimpses into being human.
We're not that different, you know? We face challenges, we chase after goals, we look for meaning in a world that can feel pretty overwhelming sometimes.
But their stories remind us that even in the most desolate places, hope can thrive.
So embrace your own journeys. Look for those hidden spots of knowledge and inspiration. And remember, the world is full of incredible things waiting to be discovered.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks for joining us on our deep dive into the Negev and Sinai. Catch you next time for another adventure in the world of knowledge and discovery.